This is Michael Delaney at the Providence Journal. Today we're speaking with two-time Pulitzer Prize-winning author David McCullough. David's new book is called The Pioneers, the heroic story of the settlers who brought the American ideals west. David, welcome.
Thank you, sir.
Starting, David, so unlike some of your previous books, like those about Harry Truman and John Adams, that are about individual people, this is about a group of explorers and settlers. How did you get interested in this subject?
Well, I've always felt that it was to my benefit, pleasure, curiosity, satisfaction to write about people whom I felt were never given the credit or the attention they fully deserved. And both Truman and John Adams were good examples of that, I felt. And I've also, over the years, I now realized, looking back, paid attention to people who set out to do some very admirable objective with very admirable purpose, and who faced adversities such as they never anticipated, and setbacks and suffering, and yet didn't give up and succeeded. And the builders of the Brooklyn Bridge, for example, the Wright brothers, for another example. And I happened upon this extraordinary collection of letters and diaries, quite really by luck, by chance. I was invited to come and give a commencement speech at Ohio University in 2004. It was their 200th anniversary, and I knew I was felt very complimented by the invitation, but I knew very little about Ohio University. So in doing a little homework, I found, among other things, that the oldest building on campus is called Cutler Hall. And I wondered who was Cutler. And when I found out about Vanessa Cutler, who came from Hamilton, Mass., I was led on and on into further investigation and reading and curiosity, and eventually wound up hearing about a collection of letters and diaries that were at Marietta College in Marietta, Ohio. And I went there, and it was something such as I had never encountered. And if you're writing about John Adams or Harry Truman, you expect that if you go to the Truman Library or to the Massachusetts Historical Society, you'll find a great deal about those two individuals, which, of course, is quite true. But here were people I'd never heard of. And when I read about what they accomplished against adversities and setbacks and sufferings, the likes of which very few people have ever had to face, and I read about their sense of purpose, of what they wanted to achieve and what they did achieve, I realized that these were very important Americans, and what happened to them and what they succeeded in accomplishing is a very important story in our history, and yet it is virtually unknown. So I was writing about an unknown accomplishment of great importance and value and unknown people, and that I really loved. I'd always wanted to write a book about people you never heard of and a town you never heard of. I think I was influenced by Thornton Wilder's Our Town, which I dearly loved when I was college, and I had some experience with getting to know Thornton Wilder. And here it was, but I always, how would you ever be able to do that as a work of history unless you had voluminous material from the principal characters in their own words, their own expressions.
Mm-hmm.
And there they were.
Wow, that's
there are thousands of letters, diaries, literally thousands, memoirs, drawings, paintings, portraits, maps, you name it. And more important, really, even than the quantity, was the quality of the letters, diaries, the quality of the writing, the quality of the thinking, the quality of their purpose and what they accomplished. They eliminated slavery in our country. They passed a law with working by lobbying the Congress, they being principally Manasseh Cutler,
mm-hmm.
saying there would be no slavery in the Northwest Territory. That was a territory all north and west of the Ohio River, which had been ceded to us at the treaty which ended the Revolutionary War. And the people who did this, and including Cutler, were Revolutionary War veterans. And the idea was that they would make up for the insufficient pay that the American troops were supplied with
mm-hmm.
through the war. They were paying what was called scrip, and it was virtually worthless, about 10 cents on the dollar. So in order to reconcile and compensate for that lack of appreciation, they were going to be provided with fine land, deep soil, very few rocks, which the New Englanders were so accustomed to, and at a very low price. Secondly, they were going to treat the natives with respect. Thirdly, there would be complete freedom of religion. And fourth, there would be public education. Public education through grade school, high school, and college. And please, let's all remember, there were no public schools anywhere in the original 13 states as yet. And there were slaves in all of the 13 states. These marvelous people said, it's not good enough to say all men are created equal. You've got to live that way. You have to make all men literally equal. And so you stop slavery. A hugely significant and admirable, but also decisive event.
Yeah.
Because it found that it meant, from one of my other things, that the Ohio River was now the barrier line between freedom and slavery. It gave rise, for example, most importantly, to the Underground Railroad. It gave rise to Harriet Beecher Stowe's famous and all influential novel, Uncle Tom's Cabin. It gave rise to Abraham Lincoln and Ulysses S. Grant and so forth. Five presidents would come out of this Northwest Territory, and two of the characters that I got to write about, two of whom I could have written a whole major multi-page mm-hmm. biography of, Manasseh Cutler and Samuel Hildreth, a physician, Dr. Samuel Hildreth, were both classic polymaths, 18th century, 19th century polymaths. In other words, men who were interested and knew a great deal about virtually everything.
Yes.
Manasseh Cutler was three doctors in one, doctor of divinity, doctor of law, doctor of medicine, and practiced all three at one point or another. And he, in many ways, deserves the most credit by far for initiating this whole idea and getting it through Congress and getting it going. He and Rufus Putnam, a general who had been a general in the Revolution and was one of the most important people that Washington depended upon. And again, a very admirable and decisive and courageous leader.
Yeah, that's amazing. Now, it's I know you're from Pittsburgh.
And I must stress, too, two very important Rhode Islanders.
Well, I was about to bring one them was, up. Ebenezer
Sprout, who was impressive, if only physically. He was like a giant. He was 6'4". He towered over everybody. And he was a surveyor who had some experience in the wilderness of the Northwest Territory. And then Jonathan Duvall, who was a boat builder. And these people all knew that building boats was going to be essential to the success of the community they were setting out to create, because they would build boats that could go down the Ohio River onto the Mississippi, and then on down the Mississippi to New Orleans and out to sea. And they had, because of the trees in Ohio, which were immense and of every variety, they knew that they had the material with which to make some of the best boats ever made, mm-hmm. sailboats.
Now, what were some of the major obstacles to settling that area?
Everything you can think of. The trees were the most daunting barriers. They were so big we can't imagine. It's like something out of mythology. There was a hollow stump of one tree in which six men on horseback could get inside. Hmm. Then there was every form of natural hazard, snow, earthquakes, floods. The wilderness was filled with bears, panthers, wolves, rattlesnakes. There were epidemic disease, mainly smallpox and influenza. And, of course, there were the Native Americans, with whom they tried as best they could to get along, and did, by and large, up until a point when other unfortunate conflicts broke out elsewhere in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, we have to remember, they had no anesthetic, so that there was no pain reliever. And people, of course, had accidents. They had toothaches. They had childbirth. They had no chainsaws. They had no mm-hmm. any of the equipment we would think would be essential to clearing vast forests. And they were hard workers, because they had to work in order to survive.
Mm-hmm.
The women in particular, not just the cooking and the growing of vegetables and taking care of chickens and so forth, but taking care of everything that was essential. All the clothing, they had to make the clothing, had to tend to sick children, had to give birth to children. They had large families, and they suffered the death of children. Mm-hmm. from disease or from drowning in the river. Virtually all each of the characters who are the primary figures in my book all suffered setbacks, suffered heartbreak and agonies the likes of which they could just barely take.
Yeah, it's.
I think that in many ways, compared to those people, we're all a bunch of softies today. And they deserve much more of our gratitude for what they did, what they accomplished for us.
Yes, yes.
I think history teaches, has many lessons from which we can benefit. But two of them are gratitude and empathy. To put yourself in their place, put yourself in their shoes, if you will.
Yes.
And to realize what they had to contend with. And secondly, gratitude that they did what they did. The first public library was created in the wilderness by these New Englanders. The first public library in that new territory. And the school system and the layout of the town. They were really transporting the New England community into this new empire in the wilderness. Mm-hmm. And they did so with the faith that education, love of learning, was essential to a good society and to a workable country, and that equality was essential. And the theme of making yourself useful in life, that was a big part of it. And they didn't, they didn't go out there to get rich. They didn't go out there to become famous or to have a lot of expensive possessions to flaunt and show off with. Mm-hmm. They went out there to create a better way of life for their community and their families.
Yes.
And to pass this sense of high purpose, worthy purpose, on to the next generation.
Now, you mentioned, David, that when some of the first groups went out there, they thought it was a Garden of Eden, but it wasn't exactly that, was it?
No, it sure wasn't. But imagine clearing up an acre or two and planting the corn that you brought from back home. And the corn grows to 14 feet in height. It was just magical. It was like they'd found paradise. But it was paradise with a lot of problems.
And so, and those settlers who first started from New England, they probably would have had to have traveled through Rhode Island on that, the first step of that long journey, don't you think?
Well, yes, but mainly they went across Massachusetts and down, and then over. Yes, they would have, almost for sure, going through Providence. They were almost all, without exception, New Englanders. Most of them were from Massachusetts, and they were, most of them, descendants from the Puritans. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that how I have pictured the Puritans through much of my life is how many of us have pictured them. I had the idea early on, when I was still in school, that they all wore black, and they all didn't want anyone ever to have any good time in life. Mm-hmm. No fun. Mm-hmm. Well, that's simply not true. They didn't wear black. They wore clothes of all colors, and they liked to sing, and they liked to dance, and they liked to have some few drinks. They were human. But what they did believe in is part of their faith, part of their creed, was education, the love of learning, and essentially, of course, the ability to read, so you could read the Bible, and to work hard. And all of that was still ingrained in these descendants from the Puritans who made up most of this expedition.
Very good. Speaking of reading, I had a question for you about your own writing. Is it true that you still type out your manuscripts on a manual typewriter?
I work on a Royal typewriter of old, and happily so. I bought the typewriter back in the 1960s when I was about to start on my first attempt at writing a book, my book about the Johnstown Flood. And I bought it secondhand. I think I paid $25 for it. It was 25 years old when I bought it. And I've written everything I've ever written on that typewriter ever since. There are more than 50 years of it. It's more than 75 years old, incredibly.
Wow.
And, you know, I put 500,000 miles on it or whatever. But there's nothing wrong with it. I have to buy new ribbons every once in a while, but it was not produced at a time when they were thinking about planned obsolescence, that's for sure.
You're not ever tempted to get...
And people tell me, don't you realize how much faster you could go if you used a computer? And I say, of course I know how much faster I could go. But I don't want to go faster. If anything, I need to go more slowly.
Very good.
I don't think all that fast. And believe, well, you know, there's a lot of thinking that has to go into writing.
Absolutely. David, this has been fantastic. Thank you very much for spending a few minutes with us, and best of luck with your book.
Well, Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you you're giving me the time. I feel that this is a message, a tale from our story as a people that needs to be known and needs to be learned. And important messages are there to be learned, and I think they are particularly important in our own time, our own day and age.
Very good. Thank you.